You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, Nash? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, March 15th, 2023, the Ides of March. And I'm your good buddy, Joe O'Brien.
And I'm Troy LaValle.
Got nothing, huh?
Nope.
Ice cold.
Yeah, I didn't have anything. I didn't want to force it.
Don't force it. You really shouldn't. We were just talking about this before we went live. Stop trying to be funny.
Stop trying to be funny, all other right? Podcasters.
O'Brien.
You're not.
Because you're not. Funny happens by accident. Yep. Lesson one of today's show is when you're sitting around in your home game, or somebody, a GM, asks you to come in for a one-shot and make a character, don't try to be funny. It's not going to be funny. It's going to suck. But if you just go in trying to be good and have a fun time, funny will happen. Funny will out, right?
That's true. You can't force it.
You can't.
But unless you're really good. We got a buddy who, he's the king of just like constantly riffing.
Constantly.
Like, he's just throwing out zingers. I mean, it's just, when you hang out with him for 10 minutes, it's 9.5 minutes of just on, bit.
When you hang out with him for 10 minutes, you are out of breath after 10 minutes. And you haven't even spoken. But you're just like, oh, my God, I'm trying to figure out what's funny, what's not funny. Like, you're trying to decipher all of the amazing bits that have been thrown at you.
The thing is, though, it's so, out of that 9.5 minutes, there's usually like 7 to 8 minutes of funny. But they're happening so fast that the bits that don't land, you don't have time for them not to land because the next one's already come in.
This has been my thing with you for years about Family Guy. This is why I'm not a huge Family Guy fan. It's because I feel like when the average joke comes every 8 seconds, it's just like I have a hard time enjoying myself because I'm too busy thinking about how good the last joke was. I can't even understand this joke. It's just too much for me. Welcome back to the FOD, everybody. We've got news coming at you this week. Some fun stuff, including I'm very excited about this week's Glass Cannon Labs. We are going to do a little bit of We Are Stupid, but I think there's going to be a little bit more digging into the mind of the GM on that, as opposed to just rules discussion, because we're too busy getting everything right.
Yep.
Troy, we don't make mistakes
anymore. Nope. We know this system down pat.
Starting off with the news, weekly studio update. There really isn't much there. Certainly not much exciting. It's just the grind. We're getting some stuff in, some ductwork installed. We were talking about what needs to happen to the floor, the epoxying of the floor, area rugs, really, really thrilling conversation. Sound dampening panels. There's been a lot of discussion about stuff this week and a lot of installations that are going to need to happen. But otherwise, yeah, things are just moving along.
It's kind of the worst part of the process, I think, because there's like so much that has to get done before the stuff that could even be remotely considered fun, which isn't even the real fun. We have to do it, but like so much of it's like, God, these are huge decisions that we have to make and we all have to be there in person and we live far away now. It's a little stressful, but we got to get it done.
I was talking to a friend of the show, Matt Jones, who helped me out with getting the trunk and who helps
Mr.
out with getting the trunk.
Jones and me.
And Steve. And he also helps out with Alien. So I was actually talking to him about our Alien Labs show and what's coming in 2 weeks. Not this week, but next week. There will be more Alien. So I was chatting with him about that. And I was telling him about some of the headaches I'm going through with the office. And yeah, he was just like, so you're talking about project management, you know? And he's just like, it's the worst. It's the worst. Because it's all these things you don't know how to do. And the problem is, it's like, oh, yeah, well, just hire somebody that knows how to do that. Yeah, but you also don't know who to hire. You know, right. Like, you don't know, A, who's good or who's a con artist, especially in the world of contracting in New York City. And you don't know, especially when you're dealing things that are like safety issues. You know, we were talking about lighting rigging and stuff. It's just like, you need to have somebody you could trust that's going to hang stuff over your head.
Did you talk about this last week? Like we're creating a lighting grid above the recording space. And so we've got a contact of someone who we thought was going to do all of it. But no. They just hang the lights once the grid's installed. Well, who installs the grid?
Right, exactly. You keep coming back to like, who watches the watchers? It's like this meeting I had with the lighting guy this week. We got a line on a great lighting guy, and I was really excited, and he gave us a quote for an installation, and I was like, oh man, this fits in our budget. This is great.
And this guy's like a celebrity lighting
designer. Yeah, he's like got a ton of experience in New York City, theaters all over the place, Broadway, whatever. He'd done all the TV shows, like all this stuff. I'm like, this is going to be great. And I get on the horn with him, and I'm in the office. I'm showing him stuff on FaceTime, and he's just like, well, I mean, I don't install it into the ceiling. Like, once the grid's there, I'll come in and hang the lights. I'm like, yeah, well, who installs the grid? Like, it's not going to be Skid. Skid's not crawling up there on a ladder.
I'm not sitting underneath something that Skid's drilled into the ceiling.
Exactly. So anyway, headaches galore, but things are moving according to schedule, maybe slightly behind schedule, but hopefully it all comes together really quick in the next 3 weeks or so. And we have, you know, more updates as we go along. I don't want to talk about that anymore. I want to talk about, can we talk about the tour? You have given me 9 major tour updates in the last 48 hours. What can you talk about with the Nash?
Well, there's a chance that the first tickets, I mean, there's a chance by the time this pod drops on Wednesday that the first tickets for April will already be on sale. But I don't feel right talking about it just in case they haven't. I could say, I mean, I guess I could say what state we're coming to because it's pretty much locked in. What do you think, Joe? Should I say it?
Absolutely. I don't see why. What do you mean it's pretty much locked in? Is it not locked in? We signed a contract.
I'm always worried until those tickets go on sale that, like, you know, something could fall through the cracks. But I think we're locked
in. I like to give people a heads up because we're already coming down to 0 hour. They should know if they live in this area that we're trying to come.
Got a little more than a month to prepare.
Yeah, in the next 5 weeks.
So April is booked. May, we're – oh, man, May is a fucking – labyrinth that I'm going through this bit of a war with our booking agent, who's a very close friend of mine, groomsman at my wedding, and we will no longer be friends after this year is finished booking the tour. June is booked. June is fucking amazing. August is all set. September is all set. But let's talk about next month. We are making a new stop to a state that we've never come to.
What?
And that state is the state of Colorado.
Colorado!
Colorado!
Yeah, I'll be scoping out places. That is the number one place on my wife's list of states she wants to live in. She wants to live in Colorado. Did you know that?
Are you going to move her and the kids out there while you stay and continue to build this empire?
Mm-hmm. Now, they're all going to learn to ski, and I'll stay here in the Northeast. The stinky, smelly Northeast, overcrowded. Colorado's a paradise!
Yeah, it is nice. It gets a little cold in the winter, but I'm fucking psyched. I've only been there once, and it was very, very quick for my old tailgate show that I worked on. So I'm really excited. We've wanted to do this for a while. When we knew that Canada was going to have to be delayed, it was a quick pivot to Colorado. And so, yeah, I mean, like I said, by the time this pod drops, there's a chance tickets are already on sale, if not by the end of the week, so that you'll have more than a month to sell this shit out so that we can come back every year.
Stay posted or stay close to our website and our social medias for the announcement of that on sale, which, yeah, maybe even happened today for Colorado. Get excited. Durango, Colorado. We're coming to Durango. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Rocky Mountain High,
the joke Colorado. Is kind of like, well, why do you have to say Colorado? You know where you're going in Colorado if you're going to Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
But all right, we'll keep the lips sealed. What about the other ones? Nothing else? You got nothing else for the people?
I'm not ready.
You can't give them states?
I'm not ready. But June, we locked in. We cleared the dates in June. The way it works is like once you pick a city that you want to go to and you pick a venue that you like, you say, I want that venue on that day. And then our manager will be like, well, there's 9 other bands that have that on hold.
By the way, is not an exaggeration.
Sorry. And you're like, all right, so we're the 9th hold. Well, we want to book it. and be like, all right, let's see if we clear the holds. And
now so we have to call eight bands.
Right. And that venue will call and be like, are you guys ready to commit? No. All right, let's go to number seven. You ready to commit? No. Are you? And if you clear all of those.
Right, right. Then and you don't forget that like when you call number seven, number seven's like, Johnny, we go way back. Can you give me 24 hours on this? I've got to check with the, You know what I mean? And then it just keeps getting pushed and keeps getting delayed. And
But we cleared both of the June dates, which is very exciting. We cleared our August Indianapolis dates. Man, Indianapolis. I'm going to need a whole podcast dedicated to what's going to be happening at Gen Con.
This is my, it's on my list today is to, as a Gen Con update. I mean.
Let's pivot
to Gen Con because
a
couple things are locked in, right?
A couple that things are locked in.
That we can at least tease.
Yep. We're gonna have the booth. Right now it's gonna be the same size booth as last year, which is a real wrinkle in the penis, as they say. Because I was all excited to do something else, but who knows? That could change by the time the con comes around. But we're gonna have the booth. There's gonna be programming in there from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. every single day, 10 to 4 on Sunday. We have pitched and two shows to be at the con itself. And both those shows have been accepted for submission. We should know about that pretty soon. And then we're going to have two shows outside of the con, one of which will be Glass Cannon Live, and the other will be something new.
We already said this on fodder, so you've given them no news so far.
Did I talk about the shows that we pitched?
I think we said we pitched shows. Yeah. The update is that they've been advanced. So yeah. Basically, Gen Con reviewed them and said, okay, you can now go to the next stage before final approval, which should hopefully come in soon. Because we got those in at early submission. There's an early submission deadline. We got those two shows in. We have no reason to think they won't be accepted, but we won't talk about them here just so that we don't get people's hopes up in the unlikely event that they are not approved, but we think they'll get approved.
I think they'll get approved. One, I think, is for, I think one is for Friday afternoon. Does that sound right? Yeah. One for Friday afternoon and one for Saturday night.
Saturday night at the con.
Yeah. So I say Saturday night, Saturday at 6 p.m. because we want to go out and have fun Saturday night. So one for Saturday at 6 p.m., which means we'd have a show Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night, and then one show at the con Friday afternoon. Again, I don't want to say what they are, just in the unlikely event that we don't get them, because people will start creaming in their jeans when I tell them what these shows are at the con. But this one that's going to be happening Friday night is going to be at a much bigger theater, because the Thursday night show is going to be Glass Cannon Live. That's going to be at Helium. That's pretty much set in stone. But the Friday night show is going to be in a new theater that is a much larger theater. They're going to be cheaper tickets, and it's going to be a whole different experience with hopefully some special guests. But again, that's between now and then, that show is going to take shape. We want to do something that's like, that'll attract people that may not know us, that maybe don't want to drop, you know, 40 or 140 on the VIP, to try and expand the awareness of the brand a little bit more and do something fun with some of our friends, something different from Glass Cannon Live.
Yeah, because once you're 70 plus episodes into a campaign, guests become hard. It's hard to just slot someone in and have the same good time. So let's take this opportunity to maybe do something a little different and make it a fun one night kind of thing for everybody. So that's the idea. And I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And we'll be at the booth a lot more. You know, last week was very, very hectic, but the plan is to have like time set up when we're going to be at the booth so we can meet and greet with people and chat. It's so fucking hectic. We're running games constantly. If we're not running games at the booth, we're running games somewhere else. We're playing in games, and then we got our night shows, not to mention countless meetings. I'm aging just thinking about it, but I was on the Gen Con website today doing some work, and even though it's 5 months away, I'm so fucking excited. I get so excited when I – like giddy when I think about Gen Con.
Well, speaking of games that I – you know, that we're going to be programming in there, I am going to throw a – I'm just going to throw a hat in the ring here and a potential guess of a game that you don't know yet that might show up in that booth. And that's this week's Glass Cannon Labs game. As I dig into this game that we're going to be trying out tomorrow on Glass Cannon Labs, 2:00 Eastern, called Trophy Dark. I'm like, this is so amazing for a Gen Con booth. It is wildly awesome, and I think that you're really going to love it. I don't know if you'd love playing in it. You don't love games anymore,
right?
But it is a wonderful layout that is very Blades in the Dark in its style in terms of how the die roll works and stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, success with consequences, whatever, all that kind of stuff. But I just want to tell you about one part. So this is something that Matthew Cabotacaz brought to the table. Matthew is going to be running this tomorrow, Thursday, March 16th, 2 o'clock Eastern at twitch.tv/theglasscannon for myself, Skid, and McD. We're going to do kind of like an intercompany little tester of this game.
Yeah, it's funny. I messaged him this morning. Well, this is, we're recording this on Tuesday, obviously. So I messaged him on Tuesday morning to be like, all right, finally finalize the cast. Here it is. And he's like, oh man, this is great. I'm so excited. He's like, I think you'd really like this game. We should play it again because I think you'd like it. And I said,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you something that I think will get you geeked up. And I want the audience to get excited about this as well. The basic premise and the basic concept is that it is a classic sort of sword and sorcery style game, with the exception that in most games, you are considered, you know, you are expected to go in, defeat your enemies, get the treasure, and head home rich and famous and with all the glory. And this game sets out to say, no, what happens is you are a pathetic, greedy treasure hunter that, not pathetic in, pathetic in its true meaning of just like, it's just sad that you have to expose yourself to this kind of risk just to get these kind of things. Put your life on the line for money. It's a sad thing to do. And when you really dig into that, this game brings out the best of it, because you essentially do not come back and no one ever survives. It's sort of the vibe that I get from it. And what you're telling is the tale of these desperate people that end up biting off more than they can chew. And there's one thing that I wanted to read you that I just read before we connected for fodder. And it's just giving you an outline of the world and the gameplay. And it says, there are two things that you can fight in, that you can come up against in game. Folk and monsters. Folk are people, sometimes strange or magic using people, and normal animals. They can be fought and removed with a risk roll. The risk roll is the lifeblood of the game. It's when in Blades in the Dark you say, all right, I'm ready to roll, and I roll 2d6, and 4 or 5 is a success with a consequence, 6 is a pure success, whatever. That's a risk roll. They say risk rolls are the lifeblood of the game. Next paragraph, monsters are something else. They relentlessly serve the forest and cannot be defeated by mere treasure hunters. If you attempt a risk roll to incapacitate or kill a monster, you will die. That's that's the line. That's it.
Wow.
So, I mean, I am so excited to get into this. So what they say is, like, instead, your risk roll needs to be a roll to hide, a roll to escape, a roll to use a ritual against it. You know, like, you could do everything but kill it. You cannot kill it because is a capital M monster, and monsters are not killable, which is such a great concept to go in with, you know. So anyway, that's the basis of it. There's a lot more little, like, fun narrative mechanics that go into it about how the players can bargain with each other for horrible things that happen to each other's characters and stuff. I mean, it's going to be really fun, and I suspect it might show up in the booth. That's all.
Well, if they've got a healthy marketing budget, it might.
Yeah, well, maybe if people love it on Labs, come on, buy a bunch of copies, give these nice folks at Trophy Dark some money. They made a really cool game. It just fits the one shot thing really well, so join us for that. And then remember, the next week, that is Thursday, March 23rd, and I'll mention this again on the next VOD, Alien is going to return with its true episode 1, since we did character creation last time, and character creation was amazing. It's going to be a really, really fun show, so hang out for that. All right, good on news. Actually, I did want to check in with you on Dark Souls, because you sort of, and Skyrim, you kind of took a break when you had a baby, and then suddenly you were back on, and you had some time to stream, and I was curious, where are you?
I'm back, baby. I'm having so much fun doing this. This was one of my side New Year's resolutions. I'm like, I want to start streaming in the employee lounge. I think it's a lot of fun. It gives you that great one-on-one time with the Naish who like to hang out and watch Twitch streams. It's also just like scratches an itch for me, because our work is mostly fun, but very stressful. And so this is a way to kind of, I mean, I have to tell you stream all the time. So I wanted to do Dark Souls, maybe Platinum Run, because it's the only Soulsborne game of the originals that I didn't Platinum, and then just fuck around in Skyrim. And so I'm up to the painted world of Ariamis. I've been soloing every boss fight, no summons, and it has been an absolute blast. I'm not one to go back and play old games, and I'm just shocked at how much it holds up and how much fun we are having, because honestly, we're all having a blast, the people in chat as well. So I play that usually on Monday or Tuesday.
How many times did you fight Ornstein and Smaug?
6 or 7, I think.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah, I'm in the zone right now. Also, because playing Dark Souls 2, 3, Elden Ring, and Demon's Souls Remastered, and Sekiro, and Bloodborne, like, you're just, now I go back to this, I'm like, these guys are fucking I remember the Four Kings fight being like, I just summoned 20 people to come help me do that, and I still just stood in the back while they did all the work, and, I mean, we've been having a lot of fun with it, so I'd say I'm probably about 60-65%. I just finished the painted world of Ariamis. Now we're in the Duke's Archives.
I love the Duke's Archives.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a good chance I'm playing that today, which by the time this comes out will have been tomorrow. And then Fridays, I've been doing Friday Skyrim. And that has been a revelation because it's a game I have no plan. I usually have plans with games, and I have no plan other than to just explore the world with this character. And it has been so much fun.
You know, and I miss that. To me, that is the exact opposite of what I'm dealing with right now in the torture of streaming Dead Space. Dead Space is the exact opposite of Skyrim in that Dead Space is a beautifully designed, amazingly built game that is so innovative in the shit that it has and it makes you do that it feels like such a real, like, space horror exploration thing. The mix of zero G, the mix of needing pressure suits and no oxygen, and it's so much fun. But it is so intense. Like, when I finish a game session, my heart is pounding out of my chest. My palms are sweaty. I'm just like, I don't even know if I enjoyed that. Like, I'm just so exhausted and horrified. As Skyrim, I remember Skyrim, it's just so relaxing and so peaceful because there's just no real stakes. You know, like, you die, you could just reload anything. You could save at any second. You could
save in the middle of a fight and come back in the middle of a fight.
Save in the middle of a fight. And it's just fun, and I like that about it. It's like, it's not trying to give you the most intense experience. It's trying to let you tell any story you want to tell and at the pace you want to tell it, which is great.
I mean, so the last one was last Friday, and I logged on. It was the first time I'd logged on in a few weeks because Evie was born on a Friday, which is normally when I stream. I was like, where the hell are we? And then I was trying to make my way to the college of the magical college of Winterhold. And basically it's going to take a year to get there. Cause if I see a cave, I'm like, ooh, what's in that cave? And that's 3 hours of a stream. So this is what happened. I was like, oh, what's going on over here? And so I went in and it was just like oftentimes it's a bandits have kind of taken control of an old, an old fortress. So after I clear out all the bandits, I start to turn the corner and there are those fucking, the Dwemer machines, you know, the dwarf machines are still going. The dwarves are gone, but they've left these little constructs behind. And so I start taking out a couple of those and then the adventure completely changes. Now there's no more bandits. The bandits have not made it this far into the ruin, and it's just these machines, and I am way under leveled for this. So I'm going back and forth with chat. I'm like, am I going to just keep pushing through to do this, or should I just turn around? Because I'm getting annihilated by these things. Well, anyway, we keep pushing through and coming up with tactics. I'm like, what if we try this? What if we do this? What if we pause it, send this guy out, close the door, throw this bomb, running away, jumping off, making them chase me around. We get all the way to the end, and we ended the stream with me opening up this, like, ancient door where this enormous, like, 20-foot tall construct comes out. I have, like, no way of beating this thing, but next stream is going to be just me this Friday, hopefully, will be me just trying to defeat this construct. And it's so fun because as I'm going along, I'm like, oh, look at there's this must be what's happening here is the, this part of the lore and this. We're having a blast with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's genius because you know that that cave and that Dwemer ruin is all part of a side quest that you get from some NPC somewhere to retrieve something in there or do something in there. And it's all mapped out, but it's there and it exists. And if you walk in there before talking to the quest giver, it's still all there. You can still explore it all. It's not like a level in traditional games. You know, they really did an amazing thing in 2011, I think it was, with Skyrim. It just changed the whole landscape. And I can't wait for – all I think about is Starfield, I think it's called, which is their next – like their science fiction setting game that's hopefully coming this year. Keeps getting pushed back.
September, they said, lately.
And I'm just going to dive into that. You know what? Good. I'm glad it's after Gen Con. Let's maybe after Gen
That'll
Con.
That'll be your gift.
So that I show up in Indianapolis. All right. Let's move it on to We Are Stupid. Not much to be stupid about this week. You know, there are a couple things that we said last week in the in Cannon Fodder that we didn't correct this week, but that's just because those shows were recorded before we did that fodder. But we'll get around to all of that. Eric, Professor Eric throws out a compliment to you, Troy, with keeping up with all of the how difficult it is to keep up with all the conditions on your monsters and NPCs and stuff like that, to adjust those ACs exactly right so that you're making sure something is appropriately a hit or a crit even, which makes a huge difference, making sure that those values are correct. Matthew said something in passing that he could only throw his hatchet 10 feet, and Professor Eric just points out he can throw it further than 10 feet, but every 10 feet is a minus two to hit. Right. That is something that was really from 1E2, and it kind of translates over in a way. So we'll make Matthew aware of that. And we got the animal companion actions right this week, which is great. But one thing he dug into, and I heard this, not at the time, I heard it in my re-listen of the show, is the plus two striking Vorpal scimitar, this weapon. Holy crap. Let's talk about that for a second. One thing that Skid said in passing is that he believed the plus two striking meant that you get an additional two damage die. So you roll three damage die in addition to it being plus two to hit. That is not the case. Perhaps Skid just sort of said something that we heard wrong, but Eric heard the same thing that I heard, which is that you add two additional damage dice. You do not. The plus two part is just the weapon potency rune. It only applies to the two hit. Weapon striking is either striking, greater striking, or major striking. And they are plus one damage die, plus two damage die, plus three damage die, respectively. So that's good to know. I didn't realize, because we've never played the game to that level, I don't believe, of a greater striking rune. I never heard of that before. So a greater striking rune is going to be two additional damage die. So this plus two striking Vorpal is going to be plus two to hit, one additional damage die, and then the Vorpal property. And he goes on to say the weapon is still an amazing boost at this level while they are in the Dreamlands. Plus two potency weapon potency rune is a 10th level rune. We are 7th level. Vorpal is a level 17 rune.
Yeah. Well, I said this on air. I was like, when you first came to the Caravanserai, that weapon was sitting right there and you guys just didn't go look for it. When I was a young, impudent GM 100 years ago, I would be like, you guys sure you want to check that room?
Check out that. You gotta check out that.
That's Bush League GMing. You know, I didn't do it. You guys didn't want to check out that room? You lose that treasure. But I was so glad that it was written in that, like, if the PCs didn't find this Vorpal Blade, the denizen of Lang Houndmaster uses it. Because now it's being used against you. You're being penalized for not finding it, essentially. But then you still get it at the end. I was like, this is great! Because now you've got this weapon for the rest of your Dreamlands adventure. You won't have it in the real world, but it's just a fun tool. Like, how often do you get to play with a fucking Vorpal weapon?
It is a good note. I want to ask you a couple questions before we get out of here, but they are pretty deep questions regarding your GMing of this specific game, and also one of them can really apply to any game that anybody's running, whether it's D&D or Pathfinder. I've been struggling a little bit with the Dreamlands in terms of my understanding of what they are. And I wonder if you could explain, just from all of your reading, how you envision the Dreamlands. And I don't just mean what you see when you're there. I mean, like, are the Dreamlands, I always imagine them as about as solid as smoke, right? Like that they could be constantly shifting and changing, that the people and the psyches within them are constantly in flux and that there is no stability. But the more we play it, the more it seems like they're just another place, like just another land, just another plane. From your reading of it, how do you envision the Dreamlands and what they actually are when we are not adventuring in them? What is happening there?
Yeah, well, I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. Paizo even says that it, like, the Dreamlands is a plane of existence that overlaps the ethereal plane. If you get back into their, like, if you're really into their lore books, you can read about, like, all the different planes, plane of fire and the plane of this. And there's a hierarchy to the planes in the way that they're organized.
There is, like, a spherical nature to them.
Yeah. Yeah. My concept of the Dreamlands has changed a lot as we've continued to play in them. I initially thought of them as just like more like a world of vignettes, like you would go here and that you couldn't travel from Celefe to where you met Queviandra in whatever town that was. But now I realize, no, it actually is more like a world, but it's a world that is that follows the same, in my estimation, follows the same logic of dreams, and that it's kind of highly mutable and protean. There might be a straight line between two points, but it probably works more akin to how dreams work. But I initially thought that, like, if you were in the area where the Viscount was, you couldn't just get in a car and drive right to where that drug den is. I think you can. Now I get in a car, obviously, but you can travel there. And now there's something that will happen in this Thursday show that really solidified for me, a little spoiler alert for this show, and then how Dreamlands travel works. I think it's much more of a full world than just like spots. You know, like memories, but it is composed, and I think it's constantly evolving based on the dreams of people in the material plane. Like the dreams and the nightmares of people in the material plane populate and give form to the Dreamlands.
Well, that's so strange, though. So, like, because at first I thought of it the way you think of kind of Inception, right? Which to me was like a mind blowing movie, and it's kind of like, when we go into these dreams, whose dream are we in? Like, if you're in the Dreamlands, do you always have to be in someone's dream, even if it's not one of your party?
No, I think,
you know what I mean? Does someone have to be dreaming it for it to exist?
You're in the most recent collection of all dreams of all time since the beginning of time. Like, these areas that have formed up and have become names, like the Viscount's Kingdom, I think it was called Celefe, you know, that formed because all these dreams came together to form a city that is still growing. But now those dreams have been around for so long, it has formed this opulent city. Whereas other dreams have come together and formed the drug den town of, I can't remember the names of these towns. And then the Doom Idol of Ib. What was that city called?
The one where they were having the party?
The one where they were having the party, yeah. Sarkarth or something. Anyways, like, enough dreams got together to start to form actual cities over time. And now new dreams that come in may change it, but it would take a very powerful dream to completely wipe out that city. No, that city has already been formed.
Are there lords of the Dreamlands? Like creatures that, or people or whatever, that like only exist in the Dreamlands and live there and are there all the time, whether you're there or not? Like,
I think so. Yeah, for sure. I think like any adventurer, like some people become powerful enough to leave the Dreamlands. But some people are tied to that.
What about the
plane.
People that were at the party with the Doom Idol of Ib, for example? Are they all people that are dreaming, that are asleep in the material plane, or are they people that fully and only exist in the Dreamlands?
I think they're people that fully and only exist in the Dreamlands. And when they died, their whole life was lived in the Dreamlands, and they died, and they're no longer
How alive. Are they born in the Dreamlands?
They could be... I wonder, like, is it like an Adam and Eve type thing? Like, the first dream created man and woman. I imagine that is kind of how it works. But you could also travel there and have a Dreamland baby with someone that was created, whose lineage goes back to an initial dream.
Yeah, wow, so weird.
Right? Like, now there are people that are just mating and having children. But, like, if you look back at their family tree, it started with a figment of a dream.
What
That's
about
how
the-
I think of it.
What about the literal history of the Dreamlance in terms of how it comes into Pathfinder? Like, is it, or into Galarian? Because when you talk about the plane of fire, the plane of air, the plane of water, like, these are things that pre-existed Galarian, right, in terms of literature. These are ideas that have been around for a long time, and they were in other games, for example, and stuff like that. Like, is the Dreamlands, to your knowledge, something that, like, I don't remember it being a plane ever talked about in my Pathfinder games until this adventure. Like, did Paizo create these Dreamlands, the idea of a plane of dreams like this?
I don't think so. They may have named it that, but I think that it comes from Lovecraftian stuff, like the great old ones and the outer gods, when they came to Earth or Galarian million millennia before humans existed, their dreams began to populate the Dreamlands. You know, if you read The Call of Cthulhu, Cthulhu comes here with all his buddies, goes underground and sleeps. And his dreams are so powerful that they create another plane of existence. And then other old ones as well dream and start to populate this world. But then flash forward millennia later and these outer gods still lay dreaming. Other people, humans' dreams begin to populate the Dreamlands as well. So it's a plane that's populated not only by these alien intellects, but also humans that have come. So it takes on this whole other thing.
And it looks like it was created by Lovecraft, like the initial idea of something called the Dreamlands. And okay.
But Lang, I feel like Lang, I wonder if Lang was Lovecraft or if Lang was like Gygax and friends.
Hmm. Yeah, that's
because
a good question.
Lang predates Paizo for sure.
I did not know that.
I remember denizens of Lang. Unless I'm crazy, I feel like Lang goes back, and you can just see it in like Skid's reaction. It's like, oh, Lang, yeah, of course, because he probably was
right
against denizens.
He knew
of Lang
about it years ago, yeah,
in the Red Box. But I could be wrong. But the thing about Lang is like, that's a whole other. That's like a plateau in the Dreamlands that has its own rules as well. And when a denizen of Lang dies, its body is reformed on Lang. So it's very hard to actually kill one. So
Permakill.
All these ones that you've killed, they're just being reformed.
And is there any way, I guess we got to figure out if there's any way to stop that cycle. Like, you know, a lich is going to be reformed if you destroy it, as long as it's artifact or whatever it's called. What's the word? I'm blanking on the name.
Did you say lich?
Yeah, lich. It has a phylactery. Yeah. Its phylactery but if you destroy the phylactery, the lich never rises again. Is there something in Lang or something that you can destroy to prevent the reanimation?
They can be killed,
rebirth?
For sure. It's in the monster stat blocks on how to do it, but.
Oh, it's well, tell
tricky.
Me.
No, I can't.
This is off air.
All right, you have to.
All right, you have to.
Buy a Philly cheesesteak.
I can do that. All right, one more thing before we get out of here. This is the one I was thinking. It came up in this week's episode, and I don't know if we've asked it before. I don't think I have specifically. But it has to do with survival checks, which I always think are a tricky one. We've had an inside joke for a long time that whenever we roll survivor checks, you see tracks going every which way. And there was an instance in this episode where you said there was just a mass of tracks all over each other, and you can't really read what's happening here. But I don't really feel like there – I don't remember if there was a roll tied to it or a bad roll. I certainly don't remember a bad survival roll. My question for you is, when it comes to survival checks in general, Strange Aeons or not, you do seem loath to give a lot of information based on a survival check. And I'm wondering if maybe you're being too stingy and if GMs should give like a surprising amount of information on a really good survival roll. Because even if you're only looking at tracks and you sort of mentally can only imagine tracks only telling you so much of a story, I feel like that the survival skill represents a skill beyond what we as like an ordinary human being and GM and not tracker can pull from that data. And that it could be a chance for some really good exposition. And I just feel like that doesn't exist in our games so much. Like, I don't feel like people roll a survival check and then are like aware of what they're about to encounter in any way that could get them actually prepared for it, even after a good roll. I don't know. Is this making sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think sometimes I'm better with it than others. I mean, obviously, when it says in the book, like, survival check, give them this information, that's easy. It's going out of the box and trying to give you information. For me, I'm always worried about just giving out too much information or leading you guys astray with irrelevant information. Then you guys get hung up on something just because I said it. But, you know, I guess I could, like, be a little more forthcoming if you really – roll a critical survival check or something, finding the hair of a creature in the next room, and then being able to discern, like, oh, this might roll a, this looks like it might belong to a blah, blah, blah. And then you guys could prepare a little bit more. I guess I could do that.
Yeah, I mean,
like, up for, in the moment, I'm like, if it's not, if nothing's coming to me, I just don't say anything.
Yeah, I feel like if there's, like, in this place, for example, where there were all those tracks, like, all over each other. I feel like there's a world in which it just behooves you as a GM. Yeah, you give your players a little bit of an advantage, but they had a good role. And I feel like telling them a little bit of the story of what happened in this place. It's like, oh, there was a fight here. And, you know, you can tell from the way you're looking at it, it seems that there were multiple humanoid figures that attacked a creature. Or, you know what I mean? Like, giving them a little bit more detail than what you think you could pull out of an, even a good survival check. It just tells a story and it makes things more interesting than, like, you can't tell. You can't, even with a good survival check.
Well, I just feel like that, using that as the example that brought this up, like, I feel like I told you everything you needed to know. Like, there wasn't a fight. It was just a lot of people. What does that mean? I thought the caravanserai was abandoned. Who are all these people? So that gets you thinking.
Yeah, you mentioned this week that they were looking for something. Seemed like people are, like, ransacking the place or whatever.
I feel like I'm giving enough. Maybe you guys need to have more internal discussion as to what my clues mean.
But do your clues have to be so vague?
Are they?
You know, vague? Well, yeah. Could you say, like, there's a bunch of denizens of Lang? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but you wouldn't know that. Like, unless
you could.
Nikes.
That's what I'm saying. You could, right? Like, they could have a similar style of boot that they wear. I don't know.
See the Nike swoosh.
More than anything, I'm not arguing so much for more advantage for players as much as I am more chance for exposition. Because what happens is you as the GM know this whole cool story that's happening in the background. The players don't know anything. And then eventually they come up against somebody or some people and they just kill them. And you don't really get the exposition. So this was all just an idea to throw out there that, like, survival checks can be an opportunity for exposition that, yeah, it might allow the players to prepare a little bit more for something that you didn't want them to prepare too much for. But it also could give a really good chance for exposition and flesh out some of that really cool story that's happening.
Yeah, I'm all about, like, finding a way to give more of the story to you guys when it would otherwise be completely inaccessible.
Yeah.
Unless you find a journal that conveniently tells
right,
the
exactly.
story.
Just stick a journal in every room.
Why the big bad became who they are. So I'm all about that. And I agree. Maybe survival is a way to do it. I think it's just, how do you do it in a way that isn't too ham-fisted? Like, you look at these tracks and you just feel like that guy hates his mother.
I know. I know. It sounds funny, but there's, like, there are ways to pull it off because if you think about Sherlock Holmes, right? Like, that's a good example. It's like, yeah, it's all really well crafted like that, but it's all these minor details that he as a character is immediately able to extrapolate into these things that you would think are impossible to know from the data that you had, but he draws it all out, you know, by putting it all together. And I feel like that's a fun use for survival checks, is to say all these minor details. And even if you as the GM don't know what they are, you don't have to go into each one. You could just say, there's just evidence here that leads you to believe that, you know, there was an assistant and there was, you know what I mean? Like, there was somebody that was obviously subservient to somebody else who was told to do something. I don't know, like, because you could tell this or that. I don't know. It's just it's an interesting way to use the skill that I think doesn't get enough love in our games, and in mine either. I feel like it's a hard one to utilize well.
We want to give those skills some love. I did some digging here while we were talking, and the Plateau of Lang was a creation of Lovecraft. So I guess it's possible it was used in original D&D as they were borrowing from other mythos, but. It's also possible that it's been incorporated into gaming recently. But yeah, it's all Lovecraft. Everything's Lovecraft.
Everything's Lovecraft. Okay. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week's FOD. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Troy, I'm assuming you've got nothing else, right? You're ready to say goodbye to the peoples?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I like to give teases. You know, there's been a lot of talk about why aren't they using such and such a tool or such and such a tool? We get that a lot. Like, why aren't we doing this? Well, there's a reason for that. We have to build relationships with different people and make sure that it's going to be the right fit for us. However, we are in the midst of working out some pretty exciting deals with people that may begin to feature some of the products that the niche has been clamoring for a what? Long, long time. So just everybody chill. We're not a lemonade stand anymore.
Just calm yourselves down. Yeah, fun. So many fun announcements coming up. I mean, fodder is a great way to discuss this stuff. And it kills me the things we can't talk about, but more will be coming soon. Until then, have a great week, everybody. Enjoy Strange Ants tomorrow night. Come out and hang out for Trophy Dark tomorrow with Matthew, Skid Eye, and McD. And we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.
Colorado, Colorado.
Thanks for listening to the Glass Cannon Network. For more podcasts and live streams, visit glasscannonnetwork.com. And for exclusive shows and content you can't find anywhere else, subscribe today at patreon.com/glasscannon.